So it's really nice, and I think some of you will, in the audience will say the same. I definitely have grown up in my MCH career reading many articles from many of the ladies that are up here, so it's really nice to actually hear them in person, Joanne in particular. I probably use Peristats at least once a week, and in large part we have Joanne to thank from this. The other thing I'll say is, Arden, I think this is the shortest bio I've ever seen for you. This is literally the shortest thing I've ever seen. So Dr. Handler's career reflects her long-standing commitment to improving the health of women, children, and families. She received her BS from Cornell College of Human Ecology. Do you want me to see these dates or no? You don't care. Dates? Oh, right. Okay, cool. MPH and MCH from UNC and DRPH from UIC School of Public Health. She's been on the faculty at UIC School of Public Health since then and is currently PI of the School of Public Health MCH program and the PI of the MCH EPI program, and obviously a current member of SACOM. Thank you, Arden.
Thank you, Janine, and thank you for everyone to attending our session. I am going to just refer to us as we, because I think I will be challenged by the SACOM dilemma here. Okay. So I have the privilege of talking to you about Strategic Direction 1, which is the strategic direction that which we've put in the most work to date, which is improving the health of women before, during, and beyond pregnancy. And our philosophy with respect to women's health as an infant mortality reduction strategy is that improving the health of women benefits women, of course, first and foremost, but also has the potential benefit of reducing infant mortality and morbidity, particularly for the most vulnerable populations, low-income women and women of color. And we really look at the entire spectrum is as a continuum that we want to see, stop seeing each component, you know, preconception, interconception, prenatal, postpartum, well-woman health care as siloed, but we want to see them as part of a complete reproductive continuum that's really important to us across the life course. So we have had an amazing amount of time. It took us about a year and a half to 2 years to get appointed. But once we got appointed, we've been working incredibly hard, and I have to thank the leadership of Dr. Michael Liu, who was our first chair, and then followed by Kay Johnson. And I think Kay has been, like, you know, with the whip. And so we actually managed in our first year to complete a full report to the secretary, which was delivered on January 2013. Then we had, which Kay went through, and then we focused on Strategic Direction 1, and we had an entire 2 days focused on women's health in April, and followed that with a letter to the secretary about women's health across the life course on August 15th. I don't know how many other commissions, committees, work this fast and have been this productive. I'm just, you know, I think we're great. and our Strategic Direction 1, when we first laid it out there in our first report in January, had four specific recommendations. The first one was to monitor coverage and promote the use of the women's clinical preventive services. Most of you are aware that the ACA requires all health plans to cover certain preventive services without cost sharing, and there's a huge component here for women, and then requires services such as well woman visits, STI counseling, contraceptive counseling, breastfeeding support supplies and counseling, etc., to be provided without cost sharing. This is probably, you'll see throughout our recommendations, we come back to this time and time again, and we ask the secretary to help have DHHS partner with professionals to help develop clinical guidelines for well woman visits, and very much modeled on the Bright Futures Initiative for Children, and really make this sort of a cornerstone of the women's piece of the ACA. And also as part of Strategic Direction 1, we talk a lot about using Medicaid to make important changes. And we talk about the importance of Medicaid innovations and demonstration projects and Medicaid flexibility. We asked, there was an initiative, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, for Medicaid, for innovative models of prenatal care. We say, let's go beyond prenatal care and look at interconception and well-woman health care. Let's look at medical care homes for women of childbearing age with chronic conditions. let's continue and expand the idea of using Medicaid waivers and state plan amendments to finance interconception care. Again, working on the clinical preventive services idea, let's have, even though the original ACA only covers insurance plans and plans grandfathered in, let's have a well-woman standard of care within Medicaid. And again, continue to have flexibility in designing of family planning and interconception care programs through Medicaid. Our fourth strategic direction in our January letter focused on ensuring mental and behavioral health and social support services for women. Let me just say that we had four recommendations as part of strategic direction one in that first letter. We were just hitting the tip of the iceberg. We had so much more to say. We just wanted to get something out there very clear. We were really going, as Kay said, for actionable items. So we, in this piece, we talked about fully funding and implementing provisions of the ACA related to postpartum depression and psychosis, and monitoring the coverage and use of the domestic violence and interpersonal violence screening that was part of the clinical preventive services, using resources of SAMHSA and NIH to look at interventions, and also research. And a key piece was a lot of us talked about how the community transformation grants didn't focus on women's health care and women's health at all, and that we wanted to see them start to be used for women's health care. So then in August, we sent a letter. And our letter has a lot more detail. It was many pages long, and it was really drilling down into the women's health care recommendations. And we focused on preconception health care, reproductive health care, prenatal interpartum care, high-risk maternity care, and postpartum interconception care. And I'm going to try to go through as quickly as possible all of our recommendations. And what I want to sort of say to you is why we picked each segment. So we know that with preconception health care, we know that there's many factors that we've already identified that can help with reducing adverse pregnancy outcomes, infant mortality that happened before a woman even becomes pregnant. And so we asked for, in our letter, for the secretary to accelerate implementation of the guidelines for women's clinical preventive services for well-woman visits. Again, we asked her for continued support of Medicaid flexibility and financing interconception care and family planning. We also asked her to put more muscle behind the 2013 Action Plan of the National Preconception Health Care and Healthcare Initiative, which has a whole series of recommendations of things that can be done, and also really to get people to use the Show Your Love campaign. We also were asking the Secretary to focus on a dissemination of a preconception care clinical toolkit for providers. Some states have already done this. We were looking for endorsement, though, across the country, and really hit on all women all the time, every woman all the time at every visit, so that wherever a woman goes, she'll encounter well-woman healthcare messages. And also to focus on getting states to use the preconception health indicators that have been developed. We wanted to make a special mention of reproductive health care. I think sometimes reproductive health care gets sort of smushed into preconception and interconception care because it's such an important piece of this and also constantly gets part of a political football. I only have 2 minutes. Okay, so... okay, I'm taking two of Kay's minutes. Did I go... hold on, I missed a slide. How do I go back?
Backspace.
Okay. Okay, so we made it very clear, and Kay mentioned this already, that we wanted to have continued support for the Title X Family Planning Program, and we said to the Secretary, despite the ACA, we want to really make clear that this is a program that needs to continue. It provides critical infrastructure for family planning, and even though everyone thinks you can get rid of these categorical programs now that we have the Affordable Care Act, you can't. And we also talked a lot about a public education campaign for contraceptive coverage without cost sharing. And then we went back to prenatal care. I know prenatal care has sort of fallen off the radar screen. This has been my particular push within Well Woman's Healthcare in the SACEM. And we talked about the importance, even if we have some controversial issues about its efficacy and selection bias, et cetera, we know that quality prenatal care can reduce behavioral risk, reduce the impact of pre-existing conditions, help women with social support, link women to the appropriate care, and link them to postpartum care. And so we say there's a lot of things here that haven't come up in quite a while. First of all, let's not just keep on measuring visits. Let's talk about content and quality. Let's continue to support initiatives like Strong Start and have key innovations there, including centering pregnancy, birthing centers, and maternity care home. It's been 25 years since we've looked at the content of prenatal care. The 1989 prenatal care report has been sitting on people's shelves. When my students come get it, I just say, don't lose that book. Return it tomorrow if you're copying anything from it. We haven't addressed this. We have time to go back and let's see. Do you want to update these recommendations? You know, we need to think about this some more. So we're asking for actually a convention, a 2 or 3 day research meeting. How about some regular reporting of prenatal care data? Joanna's already talked about how the fact that half the states are not using the 2003 revision. As a result, we're not regularly reporting prenatal care data. The data we see show that we're very, very far from the 90% of first trimester initiation and very, very far from 90% adequate. The statistics look like 70% now, guys. Not even so close. And they're not reported every year. It's such an embarrassment. Launch a public awareness campaign to still get women into early prenatal care and include the ACA mandate for a smoking cessation during pregnancy, aggressively enforce that. Again, I went too fast. We also pulled out high-risk maternity care because we know that if we reduce high-risk, if we reduce maternal morbidity and mortality, we're going to have an impact on infant mortality. And, of course, we want to reduce maternal morbidity and mortality for women themselves. And we want to make sure that the Secretary gives highlight and supports. HRSA has been working on a maternal health care initiative. It's very exciting. It's pulled in lots of partners. And we want to make sure that that's supported and promulgated. And we also want her to, CMS is also doing some incredible work on Medicaid women's health prenatal care quality, and we want that to be endorsed. We also want to see a strengthening of support for regionalized perinatal care, another innovation from the 70s that's, you know, waxed and waned in terms of people's attention. And how about a uniform national process for reporting maternal deaths? Okay, postpartum care is another part of our letter. And we know this is now hot, but it has not received the attention it deserves. Some populations where we know the data, in Illinois is one of them, fewer than 60% of women receive postpartum care, women on Medicaid in Illinois. It's critical for the provision of contraception and to identify and treat any conditions that arose during pregnancy or chronic conditions, and of course provides critical support for breastfeeding. So we want the Secretary to start within our programs. Let's stop siloing. Let's have Healthy Start be a two-generation focus. Let's have the home visiting program be a two-generation focus. Let's build on current initiatives for the interconception care efforts that are going on and the postpartum efforts that are going on in California, Louisiana, Ohio, and I want to add Illinois to that list and really expand what we're doing with postpartum care and start supporting innovative models like centering parenting, which builds on centering pregnancy. We also want her to try to really get states to unbundle the postpartum visit from the prenatal care package. If you're billing for everything as one bundle, who cares if the woman goes to postpartum care? You're getting your money. We also want her to take a more serious implementation focus on the ACA provisions and Department of Labor provisions related to breastfeeding support, counseling, and supplies. And then we come back at the end, we wrap around and just talk about well-woman health care as the sort of the universal piece that links all of this. And so we called on her in our letter to support ACOG's call for 2013 to be the year of the woman and women's health, including OB-GYNs and the list of providers eligible for Medicaid primary care reimbursement. We again reiterated the idea of HRSA MCHB being responsible for developing the guidelines for the well woman's health care visit and preventive services visit. And really educate women about this. Women don't know. I mean, you know, a lot of women just think, I'm done. I had my postpartum visit. I'm not going anywhere. I'm too busy now. And we really want to educate women about their rights to preventive health care and really develop a continuum of care and make sure women don't fall through the cracks. So we end with every woman, every time. Thank you for giving me your 2 minutes, Kay. And just to tell you that my even though I was chair of this committee, my passion is recommendation number 5, and I'm hoping we get to it, which is the poverty recommendations, and we have a lot to say there too.